So now I'll start with my customary verse in Pali. This is a quiz part of the talk where I ask, where does this come from, if people know. Imaya dhamma nu dhamma pati patiya bunhang pujemi. Imaya dhamma nu dhamma pati patiya dhammang pujemi. Imaya dhamma nu dhamma pati patiya sanghang pujemi. Adai maya pati patiya jati jara biadi maranamha parimunchi sami sadhu sadhu. Do people know where that is from? It's a trick question, actually. Did the Buddha say this? Oh, I thought some people would know for sure, actually. No, the Buddha definitely didn't say this, but it's a later gata or verse that people use. And what it means, and this is the theme for the talk, actually, is I honour, because we've done the honouring of the Buddha, chanting the recollections of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And so this is very good. And this is what this verse says. I honour, or I pay respects to the Buddha, to the Dhamma and the Sangha, by this practice, according to Dhamma. By this practice, I will be freed from birth, old age, sickness and death. So the emphasis in this, these verses, which I really like, because when we think of making offerings to the Buddha, we often think of the candles, the incense and flowers, don't we? But really, the offering, the real offering to the Buddha, these are fine, they're lovely actually. And for traditional Buddhists, myself included, they give rise to a very nice feeling when we do offer these things, when we offer lights, incense and flowers. But the real offering to any teacher, of course, is our practice of what they've taught us. And not only the practice of the course, purpose of the Buddha's teaching is for realization, isn't it? To develop insight, to develop liberation. And this is really how we can honor the Buddha, is by becoming enlightened, but by practicing, sincerely practicing, and using the Buddhist teachings as a guideline for our lives. So one of the things that always strikes me with the Buddha's teaching is how practical they are. They're very, very much addressed to our day-to-day lives. And I know one of the things that you often find, and people tell me in Sri Lanka it's quite common, there are a lot of people who like to discuss Dhamma, discuss it, but not necessarily practice it. And they're very well versed in it. And this is such a shame because, of course, it's a bit like having a medicine. You might have a medicine for hay fever, like Venerable Susara's got hay fever, maybe even flu, I think it's a bit serious. And having that medicine, keeping it on the shelf and bowing down to it every day and thinking, oh, wonderful, this medicine's wonderful, wonderful, but never taking it. Never taking it. What good will that be? But of course, this where we have to take the medicine in order for that to have an effect. And of course, the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha is often likened to a physician. So he is a doctor par excellence for our minds, for the unhappiness, the difficulties, the sufferings in our minds. And the medicine, of course, is the Dhamma. And this is what we try to practice, put into practice in our daily life. And of course, the Sangha are those that have taken the medicine and have got good results. They've got well. So there's a chance that we'll get well too. And this reminds me of, because I have to tell a Nasruddin story, of course. It's almost, somebody told me they'll start chanting Nasruddin, Nasruddin, Nasruddin. But I'm running out of them. I thought I was just leaving in time. But this is a new one, actually, and one that's new, I haven't told before anyway. One day, Nasruddin was preparing a meal outside. They had the kitchen often you know, was away from the house because of the smoke and so forth. And he was preparing a meal, and it was with liver. It had a piece of liver that he was very, not so good for vegetarians, but had a liver that he was going to cook, or his wife was going to cook. And just as he was getting ready to prepare to cook the liver, down flew an eagle, and it swooped down, and it grabbed the liver and flew off. But Nasruddin wasn't put out. He said, you fool, I still have the recipe. Wonderful, isn't it? He's got the recipe, no liver. Because what is the recipe? The recipe is the Dhamma. It is. It's a Buddhist teaching. We've got the Buddhist teaching, but if we don't have the liver, what's the liver? It's our practice. If we don't have the liver, then we don't have the meal. We don't practice the Dhamma. And we don't get the benefits. We don't get filled with the Dhamma, as it were. That's lovely. You fool, I still have the recipe. It's great. So, as I mentioned, you know, ceremonies are useful, and we had one last week. I have to say they're useful because we had one last week for the marking the end of the rains retreat. And this is called traditionally called Katina, actually, Katina. And ceremonies have their place and they have their benefits. And one of the main things, it brings people together. That's very good. And hopefully brings them together in harmony, you know, to work together. You have to work together for these ceremonies. One person can't do it all on their own, so that's very good. And it also, one of the major things it can do is bring up faith. This is called saddha. And when that brings up faith, then that's a possibility. When we have faith, we usually have energy. And when we have energy, the Buddha said, we can develop mindfulness, sati. And when we have mindfulness, we can develop samadhi, that one-pointedness of mind, the mind coming together, getting incredible power. And then from that, from the mind becoming very still, very deep, very powerful, we can develop the wisdom that liberates. And this is all coming from faith. So when we have ceremonies, this is a good opportunity to develop faith, to bring up faith. It can bring up a lot. So it is of use. But of course, you know, we can ask what is practice? You know, what is practice? What things are part of practice? Anybody got an idea? I talk about it quite a bit, so it's easy. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, meditation is a big part. Any others? I think traditional Buddhists know this very much. Dana, yes. Dana, next one? Sila, the next one? Bhavana, yeah, same. Yes, it's those three areas of dana, which is giving or sharing, and then sila, which is ethical conduct, it's moral conduct. And of course, bhavana is cultivating the mind. So it includes meditation, but not only meditation. And the important thing I emphasize is that because it's a training for the mind, it's a 24/7 practice. It's 24 hours. You know, when we're asleep, of course, we can't practice. Because we have our minds with us 24/7. We make karma 24/7, as it were. So this is a practice that's really aimed at 24/7. You know, doing it whenever we're aware, throughout our day. It's not only for when we're at the temple. And people are very good at the temple. Usually these things are, you know, they offer dana and they keep sila and also maybe do some bhavana. So the importance of these three areas, of course, is we can use them. They're very active things. So dana, you have to do something. It's giving and sharing. And of course, ethical conduct, you have to do something. You have to restrain from doing some things. You can do other positive things, of course, as well. And with cultivating the mind, this is the action of looking at what state the mind is actually in. So with dana, the idea, and I like this saying, I use it when I teach, when I give talks on dana, on giving and sharing, and the Buddha emphasized how important that is for us. But I like the saying from another teacher, I think you'll recognize, give and you shall receive. This, of course, is what Jesus said. But the Buddha could easily have said that too. I mean, he says that with karma. We create karma from giving, from our actions of body and speech, of course, and it will come back to us we call it vipaka. There will be results, karma vipaka. So we're creating good happiness, we're creating karma. And also, when we give, the great benefit of giving is to create happiness in the mind, a positive state in the mind. It doesn't always. This is the idea. Because when we give, usually it does have that very positive feel to it. And I always say to people, if they feel depressed, and this is very, very sound advice from anybody, if a person feels depressed, to give is a wonderful way to lift that depression. Because to it brings up these positive emotions. You feel like you're helping somebody else. You're useful, and this is very important for bringing up a happy state of mind. And when the mind is in this state, when it's got happiness, when it's got energy, then it's useful for developing what we call samadhi, one-pointedness. So it's very, very useful giving, and it's why the Buddha emphasizes dana, sila, and bhavana. You hear it over and over again, especially. So it's very important. And of course, sila, this moral conduct or ethical conduct, is a gift to ourselves because it protects us. It protects us from bad karma. And also, very, very obviously, if anybody kills another person, for instance, there'll be bad karma pretty soon after. There'll be results pretty soon after that. And also with our speech, we're very aware, if we speak harshly to a person, we lie or whatever, there will be results. Sometimes instantly, if you say something to somebody, there can be instant karma, as we call it. As John Lennon called it, actually, instant karma. So it's very useful for protecting ourselves, but it also gives us a sense of self-esteem and worth. Because you're keeping a good standard. And this is a gift not only to ourselves, but to the world. Because this is a foundation of peace. The five precepts, which we took just a few minutes ago, is a foundation of peace. If the world kept this, wow, it would be like heaven. It would be amazing. It would be extraordinary. So this is a real gift and an important part of the practice that how we can honour the Buddha by through our giving, sharing, and ethical conduct. And of course, the mental cultivation, this is called bhavana in Pali, is very important because this is where it's all coming from, isn't it? Where is speech and action coming from the mind? And so the essence of the mental cultivation, looking after our mind, and this is very much the case, we are really looking after the mind, is to avoid and to let go of negative or unwholesome states of mind, dark states of mind. And to develop and maintain positive states of mind. And this is so important for our happiness. Because if we reduce the negative, increase the positive, we're going to be much happier. And also, as I mentioned, very much, bhavana is a cultivation of the mind. It's a bit like emptying the rubbish bin. Emptying all the rubbish, all these negative things that we've accumulated and we think are so important, all the hurts that we've accumulated and we hold on to because we think they're ours and they're important. And we have to live with the consequences, which is dark states of mind, heavy states of mind. And I've been encouraging, especially when I gave a talk on forgiveness, to empty the wheelie bin. We empty the wheelie bins every week, we take them out to the verge. If we didn't, it would be terrible. It would be very smelly, unhygienic. We would have lots of problems. But I say, how often do we take the mental wheelie bin out to the verge with all the rubbish from the past hurts, what people have done and said to us? So this is more important for us, actually, because then it lightens us, brings happiness to the mind, and we don't have to be taken up with these states. They really can obsess the mind. And it's for our happiness and well-being. But the main problem with that, of course, is seeing, first of all, that it is rubbish. And you can tell it's rubbish because it really feels bad. And it smells bad mentally, you could say, even. And then to realise that, it's not worth hanging on to because it's not mine, really. It's happened, it's over, it's finished, let go. It's easy said, hard to do. I know that myself. So this today I was actually going to talk. We'll see if we have time for... I'll talk a little bit about cultivating the mind. And I'd introduce that by talking about... last Friday night, I visited someone who was just passing away. They died later that evening, at midnight on Friday. And when I went to visit this woman, her daughter was there. It was lovely, actually. The daughter was staying, had a mattress in the room, and was staying there for a number of days with her mother and looking after her. When I came in, there was Buddhist chanting, and I thought, oh, gee, that's nice. Very nice. And it would be very good for the woman who's passing away because she's a Buddhist. And then I gave the precepts, even though the woman who was passing away, she was not, she couldn't speak, her eyes were closed, but she did make sounds from time to time, especially when I did chanting. There was some little, you know, and I thought, oh, that's good. So I think she was there, she was there. She could hear, but couldn't really respond because she was very close to death. And I gave her the precepts like we just took here, and then also we did a little bit of meditation. We did loving-kindness meditation, metta meditation. And I had the image, I like it very much actually. For Buddhists, any religion can use it, to have the Buddha and sitting in front of the Buddha and then him radiating his metta, his loving-kindness, his maitri. And that, you know, for a Buddhist, that would be very, very strong, filling you with it, and then you can, you know, radiate it to others. So we did that, and then we did some chanting as well. So it was a very nice visit. And, you know, I felt she was very, very peaceful. It's a great, great honour, a privilege, really, to be there when someone is dying. You learn so much, because it's all the art of letting go. When you're getting to that stage, you have to let go. But some people really hang on. And she was good, because she let go a few hours later. So this is why I was going to focus on metta today, because it's such an important... meditation. It's more than a meditation, actually. It's a guide for our actions of body and speech as well. It can inform our whole life. And when we develop metta, when we develop this loving kindness, in Sinhala it's maitri, this friendliness, it's a very easy way to avoid or let go of negative states of mind. It's the shortcut, that's what I call it, the shortcut. In Sinhala, the ketipara, maitri. So the unwholesome and negative states don't have so much room when we develop wholesome states of mind like metta. But moreover, metta is a very enjoyable, pleasant state of mind. Why not? Why not develop that as much as possible? So, and I always like to mention too that the Buddha didn't invent metta. He invented the word metta, perhaps, I'm not sure, or the word maitri. It's a common emotion that all human beings have, and maybe animals too. It's quite likely they have. You see animals with a lot of, they seem to have this affection and love for their, you know, their offspring, their children and so on. But what the Buddha did, he taught it as a meditation to make it unbounded. He made it incredibly powerful as a vehicle for enlightenment. You can actually use metta for that. Because what it does, of course, when the mind is in this wholesome state, the negative obstacles to meditation drop out. They're reduced or, you know, can completely disappear for a time. So, you know, the sorts of negative emotions particularly that metta is good for is fear, anger, hatred, anxiety, depression, these sorts of negative emotions. But also, you know, those strong sensual desires, things that we, you know, food and thinking about food and sights that we've seen, videos and sport that we've watched, or any of these sorts of things connected to the five senses, become less interesting when we have metta in the mind, because it's so pleasant. As does drowsiness and sleepiness. The mind is energized when it has metta. And also restlessness and worry, they go down. These are the classic five hindrances, all these ones, and doubt too. Because we have this real softness in the mind, this real warmth in the mind. So it's a, and I liken metta, maitri, to medicine. And it's a medicine for all these negative aspects of the mind. It can help reduce the sickness that we experience from those. So I'd like to also mention what is metta is very important. I think most people, any people got any ideas? What is metta? Loving kindness, that's good. The most important thing, it's a feeling. That's a feeling. That for me is sometimes if we don't get the feeling when we develop metta meditation, when we're doing it, for instance, then we haven't really, you know, started practicing it. But metta, of course, is a feeling of well-wishing for ourselves and for others, friendliness, acceptance, goodwill, appreciation, ease. We chanted that, didn't we? Interestingly enough, in the metta chant in Western Australia, we chant may be happy. We don't say at ease. Yeah. So it's happiness as well, safety, security, openness, all these sorts of things. So it's very, very useful. So metta is something that the basis for metta, it's very important. It's interesting with metta that if we don't have an understanding of metta, to practice metta, you need quite a bit of wisdom, actually, to make it really work. And the basis for metta, for me, and I think for all practitioners, is that everyone, myself included, wants happiness. Everyone wants friendship. They want safety. They want peace. And they want to avoid the problems, you know, the negativity, the anger, the irritation, the sicknesses of the body, these things. This is what everybody wants. So metta, or maitri, loving kindness, is wishing these things for everyone, just as I would wish them. What I know would be, what I fear would be good for me, I feel would be good for others. We're not far wide of the mark if we do that. And so we look at the good qualities of ourselves and others. This is important because oftentimes, who do we live mostly with? Who are we closest to in our lives? Ourselves, exactly. So looking for the good qualities is important because we have the more like the fault-finding mind that sees the shortcomings, how I could be improved and all these sorts of things. And I remember a friend telling me the other day on the telephone, he said, over a shelf full of self-improvement books. I asked him, have you read them? He said, some of them I've looked at a little bit, but, you know, it's that emphasis on we've got to improve myself, you know, and we have quite a negative take on it. It's not to say that self-improvement books aren't good because we can get some good tips, can't we? And this is very important for it. But it does show that we can have that negative viewpoint of ourselves particularly because, you know, what that's English saying, familiarity breeds? Yeah, exactly, breeds contempt. So when we're so close to ourselves, we can be really hard on ourselves and not see the good qualities in ourselves. So we're looking at what's right in ourselves and others, and this is very, very useful. Particularly the environments where it's very important is in the family, at work, at school. These places are where looking for what's good and right about people is very useful because it can reduce that sort of negativity, some of the bad karma from speech and action that might occur otherwise. Of course, metta is unconditional. And we just chanted that it's even as a mother protects with her life, her child, her only child. So it's an unconditional love that doesn't put conditions on it, you know. Sometimes we do. Most of the love that we give others, there are conditions, especially romantic love. The person's got to love me back, don't they? That's one of the conditions. If they don't, and if they get interested in anybody else, wow, that's big time, breaking the conditions. But metta's unconditional. And of course we have Ajahn Brahm's story. You all know the opening the door of your heart. His father actually, when he was a young man, a teenager, I think his father must have been very brave, actually. He said, the door of my home is always open to you, no matter what you do. You're welcome. And Ajahn Brahm, of course, has seen this as the door of my heart's always open to you. I don't know how many parents could say that, you know, regardless of, you know, what their children get up to. But especially if we have that attitude of unconditional giving like that, people tend to live up to it, actually, don't they? So I'm sure Ajahn Brahm was, as a teenager, you know, responded to that really well. But it's very nice if our parents can say that. It's not easy, especially some of the things that can happen with children getting into drugs or other things that can come up. And as I mentioned, it's very different from the romantic love that has a lot of conditions. It's very different from even from family love, because there's a lot of expectation, isn't there, from parents, even though in the Metta Sutta this is the ideal. But we all know, you know, that parents will know this very much. There's a lot of attachment to children. And I know some people tell me, you know, they are very afraid that their children, you know, they might die. Well, they will die someday, but something could happen to their children. It can be a major fear, major anxiety. And I've heard a few mothers tell me this particularly. So metta is something that, when we meet it, when we meet people with metta, it's quite a, it's a very warm feeling and a very pleasant. You feel connected with the person who's got metta, a lot of metta. And I know one person who has a lot of metta, Ajahn Gunha. Have you heard of him? He's a Thai monk. Yeah, he's very famous in Thailand. And he's very big. And he came and stayed at the monastery in Serpentine. And he was there for, I think, over a year, actually. He came twice, I think. A year each time, something like that. And one time the Shire were coming to look at, to talk to the abbot, who wasn't Ajahn Brahm at that time, about building permission for some new huts and so on. So it was a bit tense. And they were concerned, you know, because he could say no. The president of the council came into the monastery. And this monk, Ajahn Gunha, who doesn't speak much English, he met him. And he smiled and I think exuded a lot of loving kindness. And then he rubbed his tummy. And evidently Ajahn Brahm and his predecessor, Ajahn Chagra, oh my goodness, what has he done? There goes our huts, for sure. But he didn't at all. He really liked it. He really liked it. And in fact, that was, sort of broke the ice, you might say. But I don't know if it's recommended, though, to break the ice that way. It may work. I think anything will work as long as you've got metta. You know, if you've got that maitri, that loving kindness, it will work. But imagine, incredible. So this is the important thing with when we meet people with metta, when we develop metta ourselves, we like it. And we have a sense of trust and connection with the person. It's a warmth that goes with it. And also, metta doesn't... This is an interesting side. Ayakema used to teach this very much, that metta is an impersonal kind of love. Doesn't it sound odd? Impersonal. But it doesn't come from the sense of, you know, it's an impersonal quality in the sense, the quality of the mind or the heart. And it only depends on developing the conditions for it. Often we can say, oh, I'm not good at metta, I don't have much metta, or men say, I often hear this from men, oh, metta meditation's a bit difficult. I find it hard to connect with it. But really it doesn't. It's a quality of mind that everyone has, and we can develop it given the right causes and conditions. So that's the good news, I think, good news for us. I know for me it was very, very useful, because once I thought of it like that, it wasn't a matter of my ability to develop metta. It was just a quality that I was building in the mind. And we can all do it. And of course, as I mentioned, metta is for reconditioning the mind. Because I mentioned we need to develop metta in daily life, 24/7 is good. You know, daily life for sure, when we're speaking and acting, they're very important places to use metta, use loving kindness. But where we can really condition or recondition the mind is through the meditation. We can develop more incline the mind more towards metta, so that when we go into daily life, we can take it with us. And this is the idea, to recondition the mind, to bring that loving kindness, friendliness, openness into acceptance, into daily life. And it makes a very big difference. And of course, it's a very pleasant experience to do that. And one of the teachings I like very much, probably soon I have to do the guided meditation, I think. Do a little guided meditation, because this is about practice today. So. But one of the sayings I like, it comes from the fact, first of all, if we have metta in the mind, if we develop metta in our hearts and our minds, we're filled with loving kindness. We're filled with this positive emotion, friendliness, warmth, acceptance, openness. And this is often what we're looking for in relationships, isn't it? It's what we're actually seeking for in relationships, looking for Mr. Right, Miss Right, by, you know, looking for this love from the other person. But if we have love, we have got what we want, actually, and therefore we're less needy in terms of relationships. We can bring that to the relationship rather than trying to get it from the other person. They may not be capable of it at that time. One of the sayings that brings this home very much is that, and I think it's lovely, it's from Gaur Gopal Das. Many people know him. He's a Hare Krishna monk who teaches a lot on the internet. He's very good, I think. And he said this one time, he said, if we want to be loved, we may not be loved. But if we want to give love, who can stop us? And it's so true. Not only they can't stop us, but we're filled with the love. So this is a very important point, actually, about developing metta. And I remember my first time I taught, actually, outside the monastery. This was probably when I was a monk for about four or five years. And I went to the local meditation group. This is our training ground. Those poor people... They have to put up with all the training, you know, all the junior monks coming and learning their skills in teaching and so on. And they're very good, actually. It's very nice. It's a nice meditation group. And I went to this group. It's in the evening, on a Tuesday evening. And before that, we have a cup of tea. We have a cup of tea in the afternoon, about 6 o'clock. And I saw Ajahn Brahm there. I had my cup of tea and left early because I had to get there by 7. And he said, wish me well, and so forth. And I started this meditation this evening, talking about what I was going to talk about, which wasn't metta. It wasn't metta meditation, loving kindness meditation at all. And as I was talking about it, I had these waves of metta, loving kindness, going through me. I call it 240 volt metta. It was really incredible. I thought, good grief, where's this coming from? And of course, who did I think of? Who would you think of? I thought about Ajahn Brahm, actually. I thought, but I did realise much, much later, only in recent years, there was a woman at the group, Pauline, who's also a metta expert. She's very good at metta as well. It's her main thing. So I thought, maybe it was Pauline. But it definitely didn't feel like it was coming from me, you know, because I wasn't talking about it. It was great. It was a very good way to give your first teaching, actually. It was really good. So we can develop, we can develop metta traditionally or conventionally. We use words of metta. That's fine if people like to use words of metta. Sometimes we can use images. Ayakema was very creative, so she had images like one could be sun in the heart, radiating metta, maitri to ourselves, filling ourselves and then to others. She had flower garden in the heart. We have a flower garden with all these beautiful flowers and they smell nice, look nice. And then you pick them and give them to yourself, to others. It's very nice. And then concepts. And we will use a concept today, like best friend is a concept. Giving a gift, is it like a concept? You can visualize it too as well. You can use many different concepts, you know, like gratefulness, thankfulness, contentment, many things you can use to bring up this feeling of metta. And this is the whole point, to develop that feeling of metta. So today we'll try the giving a gift of friendship, and this is sort of like we think of the qualities of a friend, and we have an idea. You can even do it visually. You can think of a box and put all those good qualities in it and then give it to yourself and then to others. This is the idea. And the idea of giving a gift is very close to metta. It can be. It doesn't always have to be, but it can be. And once when Ajahn Gunha, this monk I mentioned before, he features heavily in this talk for some reason, he was asked how he develops metta. And metta, loving kindness, friendliness. He says when he wakes up every morning, he thinks, what can I give to the people that I live with in the monastery and then to the whole world? Thinking of giving. And this is what I say about the power of giving. Most of us, when we wake up, what are we thinking about? What I have to do today, what I have to get today, you know, and it's the list, you know, can be quite long actually. But if you start the day with what can I give today, wow, it's a completely different way to start the day. So this is the idea behind this meditation. And one more story is I think most people know the Nalagiri story. Do you know about Nalagiri? Some will, I think. Nalagiri was an elephant at the time of the Buddha, and he was in the king's stables. King was King Ajatasattu. He had an elephant stable, and they had a number of elephants. And there was a plot to kill the Buddha. And amazing, isn't it? Somebody like the Buddha. Anyway, one of the monks, Venerable Devadatta, he conceived this desire to take over the Sangha, and the Buddha didn't agree to it. And so then he tried to kill him in a number of ways. And this was one of the strategies. He was a friend of the king who he had impressed with his psychic powers. Like he could appear as a Brahmin, a young boy. He appeared before the king as a young boy. He used all these psychic powers that he had developed through meditation. And so the king was willing to help kill the Buddha. And so what their plan was to get this elephant drunk, give it a lot of alcohol, beat it so it was really angry, raging. Anybody seen these videos of angry elephants? Whoa, it's impressive. They really just lose it. They're really just out of control. And then to open the gates when the Buddha and the other monks were coming for the alms round, every day going for food, going to the village to collect food. And then the idea was the elephant would stampede out and crush him and kill the Buddha. And so they did that, they opened the gate, and then Venerable Ananda, the Buddha's personal attendant, stood in front of him, and the Buddha said, Ananda, this is not necessary. And then the elephant starts charging the Buddha, and he starts radiating, they say, loving kindness, metta. And the elephant slows down, and stops. And in the story, he even bows down, which is pretty good. And the Buddha touches him, you know, pats him. So this gives an idea of, you know, if an animal can be affected by loving kindness, how much more so people. But it also, where Ajahn Brahm, he does a nice thing. He said, sometimes our mind is like Nalagiri. It's drunk, it's angry, it's out of control. And he said, then we need to use metta, maitri, for that mind state, you know, that we're experiencing. Then that mind state can slow down and perhaps disappear. So this is, of course, metta is not it's unconditional, so we can't say, well, I'll give you metta if you disappear. That's a business deal, that's not unconditional. We give metta to the mind state and it may go, it may not. So I think now we can do a little bit of, there's a lot more one can say about it. But just do a few minutes, it won't be terribly long, this metta meditation. So if we can just find a comfortable position. and to move the body to make it comfortable. Close the eyes. We can close our eyes and get in touch with the body. And we can bring to mind the intention to give a gift of a friendship, kindness, acceptance to ourselves and to others. And we can bring to mind the qualities of a friend, a best friend. What does that mean for each of us? And to get in touch with those qualities. Maybe it's friendship, friendliness, warmth, kindness, being generous, being open, being connected, feeling a connection, whatever it is. And we can see these qualities and we can put them in a box and wrap that box like a gift. And we give this gift to ourselves, filling ourselves with these very qualities. Kindness, warmth, connection, friendliness. And particularly we give it to our bodies, starting from the head and going through the body, just relaxing it, just giving it this metta, this gift of friendship, attention. Like a mental massage. Giving it the medicine of metta, of maitri, loving kindness. And now we can become aware of the breath coming in and going out. And we can breathe in metta, breathe in loving kindness, friendliness. And breathe out metta, loving kindness, friendliness to the world. Breathing in metta, this warm feeling, and breathing it out to the world. Giving this gift to the world and to ourselves of metta. Now we can bring to mind everyone here in this hall and around this area, radiating this feeling of friendliness, giving this gift of friendship, of safety, freedom from fear, freedom from worry, to all beings here and in the surrounding area. And we can radiate this feeling of loving kindness, friendliness to all beings everywhere, all over the world, and in all realms of existence. Filling them with this, giving them this gift of kindness, care, friendliness. And now we're coming close to the end of the meditation, so we can ask ourselves how we feel now. Do we feel more friendly, more kind, more safe and relaxed, or not? And whatever feelings we had, what caused them to arise? What brought them up? We can share the energy of this meditation with everyone here, with our family and friends, and with all beings everywhere, that they may have more friendliness, loving kindness in their minds, in their hearts. May they be free of difficulties, negativity, problems of body and mind. And we can keep in mind the aspiration, may I develop more and more of this loving kindness, this friendliness in my day-to-day life. To use it wherever I can, whenever I remember and mindful, in my speech and in my actions. And we can anchor this feeling of metta, maitri, loving kindness, friendliness, in the heart, this gift in the heart, so that any time, day or night, we can remember that feeling and get in touch with it, bring it up again, develop it, cultivate it, make much of it. And now we can slowly come out of the meditation, opening the eyes and moving the body to make ourselves more comfortable. So, just to finish off, it's getting late, just to emphasize when we can develop metta meditation. As I said, 24/7, that's pretty much all the time. But before every meditation is very good, because that removes the difficulties and negativities, the hindrances to meditation. Just if Ikenma always used to teach this, you know, just even if it's 5 minutes or a few minutes, not even 5 minutes, is good. And you can use it with the object, like we did with the breath. You can, if you combine a very pleasant feeling with the breath, the mind will stay with it. It's attractive. It's interesting. And this is, of course, something that Ajahn Brahm developed. And, of course, to keep metta in mind during the day, And you notice that, where's that verse, that line in the, it says, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. If we can sustain this memory, this feeling of metta throughout the day, we can bring it up and use it, particularly in difficult situations. It can be very, very useful. And one last story that, again, Ajahn Gandha, one of my own personal stories. I remember when I first got interested in Buddhism and used to go to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia in its first home, which was in Magnolia Street in North Perth, a small house. And I wasn't used to monks or anything like that. I'd seen Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Jagra. But I was in the back garden of this place, probably went to the toilet, I think. And then I saw this Thai monk coming towards me. And I thought, oh my goodness, what do I do? I was all at sea, you say. Well, at sea. And I thought, oh, I don't know what I should do. And you know what he did? It was amazing. This was Ajahn Gandha. He came up and he shook hands. This is incredible because monks don't do it. In any traditional Buddhist country, they don't do it at all. Thai monks, Sri Lankan monks, it's very uncommon. It was only later, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but later I thought, wow. That's loving kindness for you. It's like rubbing the tummy, isn't it? But he shook hands with me. I didn't have a big enough tummy. So that was lovely. And of course, that made a big difference. Felt much more relaxed. And, you know, because he could obviously see that I was, didn't know what to do in that situation. So I think, and then maybe just, yes. So in the end, it's up to us what we develop in our minds, you know. And most people don't realise that, actually, which is a real shame, because I see people who are developing a lot of anger, hatred, rage. You know, they may be over political issues, maybe over road rage, all these sorts of things. They practice it a lot. They really get wound up. They get angrier and they're developing more negative qualities. Same with depression. Depression often is based on a negative thought that becomes, we repeat to ourselves like a mantra and it becomes deeper and deeper. And then we can't think of them, can't recognize the thought almost, just go straight to the feeling. But all these things, you know, we can practice whatever we wish in the mind. We can develop these negative qualities if we wish. We get the consequences. Or we can develop positive qualities and get the consequences of them, which is usually happiness, a sense of fulfillment, connection, and a pleasant feeling. And also understanding, wisdom can come with it as well. Usually compassion comes with it too, actually. You know, so it's very nice. So it's up to us what we develop in the mind. And I think it's a shame if people don't realise they have that option. They think the mind is just what it is. You know, you are like you are. And the Buddha is saying, no, what we are, it's just conditioned phenomena, process, conditioned all the habits we've developed from the past, all the input from, you know, family, friends, the media, you name it. It's all feeding in, making us who we are at the moment. Who we are tomorrow, next week, be different. It's changing all the time. So why not recondition? Why not, and you know, create more positive, enjoyable, pleasant states of mind? Why not develop loving kindness? This is an option, you know. It's something we can all do. So I encourage everyone to develop it as much as possible and enjoy the benefits of that. So thank you very much for listening this morning, and to all those on the internet. So if there's any comments or questions or complaints, neuroplasticity.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The science of neuroplasticity says that we can change our minds.
Oh, that's positive. Great.
So yes, there's strong scientific backup in what you were saying.
Thank you for that. That's good to hear, actually. Yes, because I think many people just feel they're a victim of whatever emotional or mental state they have. That's just there, and you know, you can distract yourself, or you can take something if it's a negative one, a tranquilizer or whatever. So. Yes.
Just one little comment.
Yes,
thank you,
Cora.
Ajahn, for a very good talk. But a true depressive illness is beyond the control of the person who is suffering. Yeah. And it really is a body-mind state which needs some medical attention. Mm. Yeah. Otherwise, thank you.
Thank you, yes. No, I think that can be very much the case, that once one's got heavily into depression,
Bhante, just a little thing about empathy.
Yes, empathy.
Because is that sort of a precursor to loving kindness? Because if you can be in that other person's shoes,
yes,
you could appreciate where they're, what they're feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a precursor to compassion too, isn't it? You know, if we can put ourselves in other people's shoes, you know, and to, as I said, you know, if we see that other people will probably like the things that we like in terms of, you know, acceptance, warmth, loving kindness, then we're more likely to give it to other people as well, knowing that this is exactly what they're looking for as well. We're all looking for pretty much the same things. So, yeah, empathy is very important. Yeah, very important. Because you sometimes see that. Sometimes people can't put themselves in other people's place, and that is very, you know, makes for difficult relationships then. So it's always good if we can do that. Yeah, thank you for that comment. Metta Sutta, yes, Dr. Jai. There we are.
You did mention this metta should not have a personality, involved person. In Metta Sutta, you do not separate one being from another.
Correct, yes.
If you practice that way, you don't separate yourself from another.
That's the idea, yes.
That's the idea. Yes. So then there is no self. That's the impersonality.
Yes, yes. We break down the barriers, you know, that we have between us and others. You know, so this is part of developing the metta, the loving kindness, for sure. Yes, yes, indeed. So thank you for that. That's good. And so it's very, as I mentioned, I don't know if there are any internet questions. No questions. All right, we can finish off in a minute. Just to make a reminder, just to return to the point that I started at, which is this is part of our practice, and this is how we actually pay honour or respect to the Buddha, is through our practice, and this is one aspect of practice, Maitri, Metta Bhavana, and important that we, you know, do develop our practice, not only of meditation, but of dana, keeping, giving and sharing, and also sila, which is ethical conduct, the way we speak to others, the way we act towards others, and then of course developing the mind as we are with Maitri. And I'd like to encourage the Buddhist Society of Victoria to record more of the meditations, just the sound, the audio, so that people can actually listen to guided meditations more, because I feel that half of my teaching here is not on the Sunday. That's why I'm doing more meditation on the Sunday now, trying to bring it into the talk, because this is an important part. Because if we go to meditations going to the control panel, I say, to the mind, and if we can do that, we can really influence the way we experience the world. The way the world looks to us is very much coming from our mind. There is a real world out there, for sure. But the way we look at it can be very different, depending on the conditioning we have in place at that time. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope some of that is benefit. I hope you can practice some of it or get something useful out of it and take it home.